Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Introducing the greatest animated series you've never seen, Lightning Dogs. These canine commandos are lost on a post-apocalyptic Earth and battling the forces of the evil Glampire. It's a tribute to the cartoons and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, and Nerdy Show is hell-bent on bringing it to life.
Blocks sold separately.
Join us as we document our quest from the moment lightning struck to every world-building session and beyond, and make our crazy dream a reality. Roll with the pack at lightningdogs.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. All right, guys, so welcome to the 13th design episode of RPG from Scratch, and if you've been listening this long, you are a saint, and we really appreciate you. So we've got a bunch of stuff to go over today, and some stuff that we'll probably end up having to save for later. There's a lot here, and I don't really know what to start with first. So I guess let's start with things that we're going to put off, which I think is path concepts.
Yeah, that can always wait.
Right, but we should.
But let's put it out there for the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Let's tell our listeners that we're not ignoring you. Like, we are also thinking about this, but we feel like we need to focus on other stuff at the moment. So things that are worthy of a full path.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I had this concept for something like a conduit, where you take damage of a type, you return it of a type. You augment an ally to do double their damage on your turn instead of you doing damage, and you change things. You dispel, counterspell, reflect, that kind of thing. I think that's a full path. Like, there's a lot of cool shit you can do with that.
And it's fun because I think it has the feel of a straight arcane spellcaster in other systems.
Yeah, you're a blue deck.
But with a lot more fun and purposefully versatile.
In RPGs that focus where all the magic is ritual based, This person who wants to play this class has a lot of fun, but the amount of prep work they have to do ahead of time is enormous.
Yeah.
Whereas if we can make some of this reactive,
counterspells especially,
if it's its own path, then I feel like that could be really fun.
Well, and it also deals with, I think, a thing that is a slight problem, which is that our spellcasters sometimes feel a little outgunned or a little less able to like just jump into things or splash things.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, you know, if you're an ice mage or a decay mage or even something like Radiance or maybe even a fighter, you could just splash the null or the counter spell caster or whatever we're going to call it.
Yeah.
And do a lot of fun stuff and add a lot of versatility.
Getting Reflect as a shield bearing citadel
would be dope.
It would be insane. We removed the shadow servant from decay, because things you can do with shadows could be an entire class.
Yeah.
Even more than just a servant. Like, you can just the things you can do with shadows would
you
be
could
really
evil
cool.
Peter Pan that real easy. It'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure. Dark Link, you know? And I feel like that we should explore that later. That could be a really fun class thing to dip into. Also, Beastmaster. Mm-hmm. That's an archetype that's classically been put on hunters and rangers.
Yes.
I think divorcing it from that base is good.
Yeah.
I think just focusing on the beast mastery elements of that only involve your relationship with an animal and how you play off of each other.
Hagrid went one way. He weren't no ranger.
Dude,
no.
Well, I was also going to say.
He's kind of crossbow.
Yeah.
He goes out in the woods. Yeah.
But he's cross-classing into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel that's true for
He's definitely a bard or a cleric or something.
But but also, he's got a little bit of citadel in him.
Yeah. He's a tank.
He's a tank.
Yeah.
And even Beastmaster from Beastmaster would be like champion Beastmaster.
I think, yeah, he's almost scoundrel.
Like, yeah.
He's crafty.
Yeah. Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle?
Beastmaster.
Straight Beastmaster.
Straight Beastmaster.
Straight Beastmaster. Core Beastmaster.
Core Beastmaster.
Step 1 Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Step 2 Beastmaster.
Exactly. All right, so let's think that direction. Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah, for that.
Yeah,
okay.
I like that.
So in that same vein, Druid.
Yes.
That is not a Beast Mastery class, and I think that animal companionship that has been attached to Druidism is same as Ranger. I think remove that. If you want an animal companion,
step one, Beastmaster.
You go Beastmaster.
Yeah.
That's what step one Beastmaster should be, is animal companion.
Yeah.
However, druids, things like wild shape, transforming yourself into things. Mm. Or remember the warden from 4th edition?
The bramble.
You become a bark skin
tank. Yeah.
And lots of controlling nature to bend to your will.
Having nature augment yourself, perhaps.
Yeah. So shamanry, druidic disciplines, those things can be bundled together in like a nature style path.
Dirt wizard.
And it meets the two requirements that I think
soil
we should.
Dug.
It's the thing I think we should always think about if we're going to start making new paths or adding paths. It needs to do two things, which is one, be able to stand on its own, and two, you need to be able to dip into it and have other things dip into it and have it make sense.
Yeah.
And like Citadel Druid sounds tight.
Sounds great.
Fire Druid could be awesome.
But I also think we don't call it Druid. Maybe like Path of Nature Command or Path of Shamanry or something like that.
Shaman's kind of cool.
Yeah, but I think nature is closer to what we're talking about.
Yeah. Also, Shaman has connotations that are in its denotation.
Separately.
There's probably a word out there.
Because so does Druid. Druid has that problem too, where in D&D, we know exactly, D&D, World of Warcraft, RPGs, we know exactly what it means. However, outside of that, Druid means Gaulic.
And I think that's why we went scoundrel rather than rogue. Rogue is a specific thing. Scoundrel is a little broader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is Han Solo a rogue in the way that we think about him in D&D?
No.
Not at all.
But he's a scoundrel.
He 100% fits a scoundrel archetype. And I could see easily building a marksman scoundrel that would be Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's one. You know what? I'm gonna hold this one for now. And I'll bring it up in a minute. Also, the concept of side paths. I think we're all about this. Where maybe there's only five steps in a side path, but it does something extremely specifically.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about Atlantically.
It does something extremely Atlantically that you have a character concept in mind that all you want is to get some kind of validation that it can work mechanically. These side paths are just to give you just enough tools to make sure that's true without gimping you.
Yeah.
So the ones we talked about are pugilism, which is unarmed fighting.
Yeah. Monk, brawler. You could build a lot
wrestler,
of cool...
grappler.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of it. Well, I guess the term pugilism doesn't imply grappling, but...
prize fighter.
We'll throw it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe that's three steps. I don't know. Maybe three to five, something like that. I don't think it takes much to change a champion into a pugilist.
No.
Or
a citadel into a heavyweight.
Or a scoundrel, even if you're a rough and tumble, you know.
Oh, yeah. You come
into a bar brawler.
Yeah.
You come up behind him with a garrote, yank him, throw him on the ground.
Or even unarmed sneak attacks. Those are things that works. Sucker punches suck.
It's rear naked choke.
Yeah.
Sneak attack. You run up behind him, grab him, fall on the ground, choke him out, right?
Donkey punch.
I want to call it donkey punch. I want to call it donkey punch.
That'll be an ability you get.
You don't see that one coming.
Hang on. You resisted.
You hate pocket sand.
You resisted so much on pocket sand.
I was making a joke, but now you're saying we're keeping that one.
No, we are, because that's the flavor I like, Doug.
Is there any ones that you turn down ever? Is there any joke gets thrown out? You're like, no, that's too much.
There's some things that are almost like too fan servicey where I'm like, no, get the fuck out. Like King of the Hill isn't.
Literally quoting King of the Hill is not too fan servicey.
No.
But what is? Give me an example of what's too fan servicey.
Probably All According to Keikaku is probably too fan servicey.
That's too much.
But it's going to stay as long as I can keep it in.
As long as Max.
as long as I can use it to torture Max because it's in his list of abilities.
Yeah.
I have a bad feeling about this would be too much.
Yeah.
When you say pocket sand, there's going to be one guy in a group of 10 going like, I want that.
So another one is dueling. So like the duelist of like you pick somebody similar to like a champion's challenge, but you would get a bonus against not being hit by them. You'd get a bonus against if nobody else is close to them, that kind of thing. That could be just a small little side path.
And that would completely change the way that you play your character.
Exactly. But it puts you into a character concept. So maybe none of these character concepts are things that have a core.
Yeah. Mm. Ooh, I like that a lot too.
Well, that makes
no
it simple
core,
too.
Just steps.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, cool. So I think that one's pretty self-explanatory. Dueling, like you're one-on-one. Firearms.
Because how do you... I'm core firearms. It's like that... What
no.
Is that?
No, I'm core marksman. Yeah. I use guns.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. You just answered
or,
it like...
I'm core fire. I also carry a pistol.
I'm core firearms. I just build them. I don't shoot them. I'm a pacifist. Like, I just make a business.
You're like Captain America in the first Captain... Well, not the first one, but Captain America, the first Avenger of the current Marvel comics, where he runs in with a pistol and a shield.
Yeah.
Which is dope.
Yeah. That could work. Another one, alchemy. Now that we're starting to get into what does the profession of alchemy do,
yes,
I feel like there's a lot of fun shit for throwing bombs and potions and making aerosolized poisons and that kind of thing could be really fun. There's tons of alchemist archetypes, but they all have some extra thing like, oh, you can create a secondary companion, you can do like all these things.
Yeah.
I say leave all that out. If you want
just
that,
do the alchemy.
You want to make another companion, you can do Beastmaster.
Yeah, because
Beastmaster Alchemist actually might be really cool.
Yeah. Because we are...
taking venom out of snakes and shit?
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Anyway, sorry.
No. I was stopping because I wanted you to continue. Yeah. Because we focus so easily on multiclassing, we don't have to bundle things together. You can take that if you want it.
Well, and we've had that conversation a couple times, just like figuring out what an extra path is. We're like, that's a cool ability. And we're like, but is that what Citadel is and represents? Or is that just something that's useful? Yeah.
Well, and when you're doing, file it away.
You're doing different modules. Like if you're doing one in the future, you just either add a new set or you remove other sets. You know what I mean? It's like.
You could. Yeah. I mean, like version 2.0 or whatever.
Scoundrel could fit in a lot of settings.
Well,
a dude with a knife. Works in a surprising amount of places.
Right. I just mean,
well, I think what you would do, for instance, if you have a setting that takes place in a sci-fi or modern setting, marksman is no longer about bows. You say, hey, listen, when you address the marksman class, here's what changes.
Yeah.
These descriptions change in this way. And then you create a couple new paths and side paths for that setting.
Citadel might not work.
Or you create a reason for it to work because it uses a different... object or something. Let's not worry about that now. But you know,
I just meant that in other, like a futuristic setting, you just have a new side path, like robotics,
you could just computers.
And you just keep the main cores, but you just flavor text it differently, and then just all like it's like a new module isn't all new rules. It's just here's new side.
Well, here's the thing: instead of calling them modules, because that could mean a lot of different things.
Right.
So D&D uses the term adventures. Pathfinder calls them adventure paths. Let's just call them campaigns.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you get a campaign, we'll tell you how far it should take you once we understand how far things get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, based on what we've played.
I do immediately think our rule system is more flexible.
Well, here's the thing. So I just started a recent adventure path with Pathfinder, and in that adventure path, and this is true of D&D as well, they'll introduce like a rule set specific to that adventure path. So the one I'm playing right now, our listeners might be familiar with Curse of the Crimson Throne. It introduces the concept of the Harrow deck, which is like a tarot deck, and it gives a framework for the DM to randomly pull cards, and it has like a prophetic meaning.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. But it's specific to that campaign. And there are feats that you only gain in that adventure path. And weapons that you can choose at character creation to be proficient in that are specific to that adventure path because of the exact place where your characters are expected to start. And also, they give you things like traits.
And it helps with the flavor of the whole thing.
Yes. For instance, the one we're playing, there's a bad guy at the beginning of the game who everybody in the party is expected to have beef with. And they will give you, I think there's 5 traits, and each one is a plot hook. So you'd say, oh, you're missing a kid, or you have been betrayed by this guy. And they each give you a mechanical bonus to things in the game.
Ooh, I like that.
It's a good system. But I feel like they are limited in ways of what they can allow for characters that we are not. We can do lots of creative shit for campaign-specific side paths and all that
weapons,
shit.
Weapons, character bonuses. Like, you take this trait, you get this thing.
It would spells, be, like a forgotten spell of some kind.
It would
like,
be trivial for us to introduce a race that you can play for a campaign.
Yeah. I want raccoon people. So in fact,
I know you've already decided.
They're in my campaign.
You just
want to
be Sly Cooper.
They're in my campaign.
You
want
to do a Sly Cooper campaign.
No, I just love the phrase we're talking about. What would be our goblins? Raccoons. And then was it Max or you that just said, there already are goblins? It was like, you're right. They just are goblins in our real world, and we're just okay with it.
Yeah. You see them steal the cat food and run away
with their hands, little hands. Yeah.
You're like, that's a goblin. That's
a
what goblins do.
Wash bear.
Yeah.
Illusion.
Ooh.
I could see that being a side path, but keep that in your heads. I'm going to table that because I bring it up again later.
All right.
And also the idea of mixing magics. So the idea of having a path that would grant you bonuses for switching between different magics on the fly.
The Todoroki path? Got it.
Yeah, basically. So, like, if you hit multiple enemies, it will give you a bonus to ice damage. Yeah. If you hit, like, whatever, it'll...
If you slow someone, you get extra fire damage or malediction exactly. damage.
If you use decay magic, you get a bonus to... You get a plus one to hit with ice and a plus two to damage with fire. Like, something that just bridges the gap a little easier as, like, a 3 to 5 step side path.
It would be amazing.
That would be so easy.
Do we want to make it that specific or just, you know, there's a two-step combo of one kind of magic, different kind of magic, you get a bonus. Oh, no, you got three, you get a bonus. Oh, no, you have all four now, you get a bonus. Because that would be weird at that point, but also really cool. And you'd have to invest a lot of time into doing it.
I think we do make it that specific because at every point that somebody wants to take a step down another path, they have a bunch of other options available to them. And if they really want to focus on that, it should be rewarded but not overpowered. So I think we do focus. We tell them, like, these are the specific benefits you get.
That's for, like, magic super nerds. We allow for that to exist.
Mm-hmm. My first question outside of side paths is, we removed Shadow Servant from Decay.
Yes.
How do we feel about Necromancy being a component of Decay?
I'm into that. I think that works.
I mean, you would... I could see an argument for why you'd keep it as a separate class, but I think if you folded in like further enough down that path, like Decay is the is the path to Necromancy.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know.
Because I would imagine, so the argument against it, in my head, the best argument against it is, if you're trying to destroy things through entropy, how would you create a new thing? And I would say your mastery over death allows you to create creatures.
That embody it.
Right, that embody death. So an undeath, which I think we don't create a separate subclass. Undeath, like undead is not a kind of creature, if that makes sense. Like when you... If you're
doing like Radiance or... No, not Radiance. What's our paladin equivalent? Is it Radiance?
Radiance Zealotry. And Zealotry. Yeah.
So like if you're... Undeath is not natural. Death can be natural. Undeath is not natural. Therefore, I declare war on everything undead.
Right. I think we abandon that.
Just the whole thing?
Yeah, I think that's fine. That's already in D&D and Pathfinder, as clerics and paladins smite undead and or turn undead. As my cleric in Pathfinder, my channel energy will just nova groups of undead. It'd be disgusting. I think the creatures created by necromancy in our setting are not undead. They are flesh monsters created from the raw components.
Yeah, they're Frankenstein.
Right, so maybe we have like...
So they are alive, in a sense, but unnatural.
Only maintained by the magic exerted by the Decay Mage.
So the magic, they're just puppets.
Yes.
They are completely dead, but the magic is just what's making them move.
Yes.
They're animated.
Well, yeah, they're not dead.
They're reanimated.
But not undead in the sense of like zombies and vampires, right. That kind of thing.
There's no like self-autonomy. It's just... Because as soon as the magic's gone, they just fall back down dead.
Right. And I think a way to mechanically reinforce that idea... is that, so for instance, in the way it works in Pathfinder, if you want to make a necromancer cleric, you raise that creature that died, and then you apply a template that removes things like its intelligence and that kind of thing. You can create intelligent and undead, but that's its own separate template, but it retains a certain amount of its own strength and its own whatever.
Have any of you been watching Castlevania Season 2?
No.
No, I haven't done
There's
that.
There's a character that is like they call him like a forge master, and they bring bodies to him. And he just takes this like magic hammer and he starts like banging on like the table, like this giant stone table. It's causing like sparks, like if you're trying to like ignite a fire, and it just starts igniting this like glowing fire inside the monsters. He's reanimating them. He's kind of a necromancer, but yet it's almost. I bring it up because it's almost exactly what you're describing, and it just is exciting because it's like I already know exactly how to play that. So it's
My thinking is that. A decay mage would not look at this body as, oh, we just killed something powerful, so let me resurrect it under my control. It is, look at all this raw material.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And I'm going to reshape it into one of the 3 to 5 things I can reshape it into.
My flesh golem.
It's like, yeah, like I'm really good at Lego and these are all just pieces.
Yes. So the templates could be based on, it doesn't matter how powerful it was in life at all. It matters how much mass it had. And from that, what you could turn it into.
I like that.
That's at least a good twist on it. Makes it interesting.
Right. So now it's not an undead creature that's it's soulless, reanimated, whatever. It's was this a large enough creature to create a large undead that has these strengths and these weaknesses? Or can I create 15 small ones with this strength and this weaknesses? I think 15 is too many to manage, but...
Five would be a lot.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to make... Let's say something small would be so complex that it would take a lot of material to make it correctly.
Or just a lot of your concentration to maintain, even.
Yeah. So I think I want to throw that idea out to you guys to think about that, because necromancy, I'm thinking, is almost like the Zimichi in Vampire the Masquerade, where they are flesh crafters. They deal with raw material.
Yeah.
Not raising the dead and putting their souls into purgatory. Like, it has nothing to do with that. It's just, I got this raw material. It has to be extremely fresh. Like, maybe we could put a rule on it. So something killed within the last 60 seconds, you can start.
Well, I think it would be more than 60 seconds, but...
Whatever limit we decide to put on it.
Yeah.
Like, it has to have just
happened.
When
does rigor mortis set in?
Oh, well, I would think rigor mortis is way... The magic is what moves you.
I'm saying it's, that's... No, but even still, like, that is ruined flesh. Like, by the time rigor mortis is setting in,
no,
that is...
Well, that's not true either. Rigor mortis, I think it takes 12 hours to set in and another 12 hours to go away, and you're still not rotten. I think it needs to happen sooner than that.
Okay.
Like, I even think 60... Like, the battle ends. It's dead. You need to start work immediately.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
For it to be at least... easy.
Yeah, you can't come across a corpse in the woods
and be like, okay,
yeah, like, I'll raise it. No, that's not how it works. Like, you need it. You need immediate access to it,
almost like finding a car that's been abandoned in the woods.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, this is all fucking
can't
rust
drive
bucket.
It away.
Yeah. But if someone left the keys running in it, you know, like, the keys are in it and the engine's still running, you can hop in and dig it off, you know.
So let's put that out in the ether and we'll revisit that. Maybe we can move it into step three as a utility where they can start doing things like the scoundrel for traps. Like, that'll be the thing. But let's not worry about it. We've got a good step three to deal with now. We can change it later if we need to. Small stuff before we get into big stuff. I want to change the term vector to ray.
All right.
Because other RPGs use the term ray. The terms that we use for the abilities that are vectors use the word ray.
Ray.
And I feel like people are... We'll just let that terminology do the work for us.
I do want to say a thing. I think we need to change one of the names of Burning Lance and Burning Ray. We need to change one of those.
To remove Burning?
Just because it's too similar. It bothers me.
Okay. Well, let's change...
I know it's super minor.
No, it's not.
But...
Because it comes up a lot. Because we have somebody who uses one and somebody who uses another. And
flaming,
that will not
burning,
be... Blazing?
Blazing.
Let's do blazing as radiance.
Or inferno ray or inferno light. I don't know.
It can be like glittering or
scorching.
No, it's still fiery, man. That's still heavy.
Dazzling?
Ooh.
Scintillating.
Sexy.
Sizzling.
Penitent ray.
Let's use dazzling for now. I feel like that actually does the...
Give me the old razzle dazzle.
Command core and marksman core each need one small thing. Just a little twist.
Okay.
That will really round them out. I think for command, we give them something like a lay on hands.
A one time per encounter?
Daily.
Ooh, okay. Not counted in the daily count?
It's not an attack.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So it is a swift action. Once per day, they can look at somebody's wounds and help them realize that they're not that hurt.
Okay.
They have to touch them, but it brings them up to full health. I feel like... That gives command the extra bonus to where somebody's like, well, we've got a healer, but do we have enough?
Yeah.
I feel like command could use something like that. How do you guys feel?
Works good in a pinch. Like when, if your healer goes down, it's like, fuck, then you can run over and...
Now, it's only in core, so you still have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that is enough, that is not too big of a bonus, but big enough of a bonus that would, if I was torn between core command and something else, that could be potentially be the thing that makes me... Decide on that one.
Marksman. So what marksman has in its core is cover fire, where when an ally misses with an opportunity attack, you can make a free attack, which is good, but not as common as it sounds.
Yes.
Especially not if your enemy is very intelligent.
Or you have someone with Citadel who, even if they get to make a lot of them, they get bonuses and they hit a lot.
Yeah, exactly. You'll only get it if they get an opportunity attack and they miss. Yeah. And we get +1 to all range attacks. It's great. I don't want to change that at all. I don't think it should be a +2. I think +1 is enough.
Uh-huh.
and they get suppressive fire, which is a area attack where they just launch a volley of arrows. They need one little twist. Just one more thing that makes them worthwhile.
Is there an encounter and an at-will in core, usually, or just...
No.
Okay.
Maybe an at-will, then, you thinking?
I'm almost saying something defensive.
I think that you're on the right track there.
Yeah, because those are all offensive and position... Like, offensive and your position determinant.
Secondary idea, while you think about that. What if being core marksman removes the strength requirement for any range weapon?
Ooh, I do like that.
Or reduces it by 2.
That's nice. Two is enough.
Yeah, because if you remove it entirely, then it's just like...
What?
Yeah, it's a little picking up a trebuchet and putting it on your shoulder. Like, you know, like...
Yeah.
If it removes the requirement, I can do it. Like, you know, it's...
Well, what's the highest strength requirement? Longbow is 2. So maybe you reduce it by 1.
Yeah.
That might be enough.
Reminds me when the first game I played, when Liam was DM... And we were trying to build my character I'd never played before. And you're like, oh, if you do this, 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 then you can use a superior crossbow. I'm like, that sounds like a good idea.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
And it became the shit, you know? So,
okay.
Your goblin sniper. I
loved him. I still love him.
I hated him.
He was great. His name was Grog.
He did so much fucking damage.
Yeah.
All of the... even when you didn't use sneak attack, you did decent damage.
Yeah.
It was infuriating.
Oh, so much fun.
And anything I built couldn't see you.
It was
I couldn't yeah. get someone
well,
smart enough
was,
to see
That was a
you.
Perfect storm, though.
I know.
Because we made that Rube Goldberg machine of just like, I'll never forget being on the Bloody Mage, which before it was named such, and just making that fucking conveyor belt of death, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
so for listeners who don't know, in 4th edition, I played a 14-year-old warlord, human, who used
a
reach,
son of a bitch.
Yeah, weapon, and we stole a boat by killing everybody on it that was full of mages.
Yeah, but they were all bad.
We assume. And,
one of them was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Only one, though.
The routine was that I would stand behind the Minotaur Barbarian, who had Executioner. If somebody was prone, he dealt 5 extra damage flat. And Doug's character, Grog, was a goblin rogue sniper who would deal sneak attack once per round.
Yes.
If he had not yet done sneak attack, I would grant him the shot so that he would deal sneak attack.
Which was 2 die 8 because you got...
Yeah, you had a bonus.
Backstabber because you're an asshole.
But if he had, I would trip them and then let the Minotaur take the...
You would trip them and then sometimes even
shove them
to the Minotaur.
Move,
yeah. So it'd be like... Plink, slam, slice.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
Just push him. Playing shuffleboard with mages.
Yeah, push
that him. That wasn't even the most infuriating fight.
Well, so also, because
the
he was...
Fight.
Yeah. But also because Doug's character was a goblin and a rogue. If he moved...
If someone missed with an attack on
me... He would get to shift, which is like disengage, as a free action.
Yeah.
But if he moved twice in one round... He could make a sneak check again to remain hidden. So what would happen is all the time...
With like a 12 bonus, too.
Yeah, if
it
people would focus
sick.
On him, they would miss, he would immediately go invisible.
Yeah.
Poof. You were just like
ah! I'd be like, ah, fuck! And then I'd disappear. Because
yeah.
he's a short little guy, too,
just
so it was perfect.
Arrow Batman. You were like, yeah, you were Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Just poof. Like, where is he? Who fuck knows? He's gone.
So, but
coming in to murder me in my own tent, I'm like, you know who the fuck I am? In the middle of the night? Like,
you were the only one who woke up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. I feel good about these 2 changes. So Command gets like a Lay on Hands ability where they're like, get up, you know, walk it off, whatever. Marksman removes 1 from the strength requirement of any ranged weapon.
Yeah, because if you're going core,
yeah,
you know, may as well.
Okay. We brought this up last design episode. Does magical damage from weapons multiply with abilities that multiply weapon damage? So, for instance, something that does, like pinning shot with marksman, does 2 weapon damage.
Uh-huh.
If it does D6 fire because you've added a fire enchantment or magical item to that bow, does that double as well?
This is the dependent. When do you start getting serious magical items?
I think, well, serious is a weird term.
When do you get damaging magical items?
I think immediately.
Then no.
You just go with whatever the higher damage is?
It can't be automatic because if you're core in step 1, there's a couple 2 weapon damage abilities.
Helmet Splitter
get.
Is 3
yeah.
weapon damage.
Oh, already. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like adding a 3d6 to that makes a good ability on like...
Yeah.
Then I can't like...
Because you
as,
wouldn't... You
as
wouldn't...
a mage, you cannot touch that fucking damage.
Well, because also Nesbitt, our scoundrel,
yeah.
has Helmet Splitter. He's step 1 champion. If you gave him 3d6, he will choose to do Helmet Splitter every time.
Well, and that makes Helmet Splitter, even with someone who has a one-handed hammer, that's now better than my daily, no matter what.
So I think, let's think about augmented magical damage as something that can progress.
I'm into that.
And then let's divorce it from weapon damage. So your weapon will do that damage, but the way it progresses is not linked to weapon damage or abilities.
No. It's okay. Like the weapon just has a flat damage potential, and then the magic is what can take it up to the stratosphere after that.
Right. Like, so you could get potentially a fire enchant that does 3d8, mm-hmm. just pie in the sky, like theory
crafting.
Yeah,
that's like end game, right. You have the fire sword. It does an extra 3d8.
Right, but you get a ability that does 4 weapon damage. Well, it's fine. You're going to choose to do that and your 3d8, not 4 weapon damage plus 12d8.
That would be ridiculous. Oh, that'd be so many.
Yeah.
You'd just be like, eh. Okay. He's like, I don't have 9d8.
Everyone just toss it in real quick.
Toss me your boys. Like,
again, we just did this last round.
In that same vein, what about malediction? Does malediction multiply?
As it progresses?
How do we increase malediction's effect? Maybe by things that are termed buff and debuff in mm-hmm. decay?
Is that core or step one?
Core.
That makes it difficult.
It makes it complicated. However, if we designate it as a debuff, decay gets things that augment debuffs.
Yes.
Then malediction is accounted for.
Count as a debuff then.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a scenario.
So you're fighting a group of monsters and you cast malediction on 3 of them. Everyone else has gone 7 steps. So have you. Malediction currently does 1d6 extra damage whenever you deal damage. They will have been getting abilities that augment extra damage constantly. You haven't. You've gotten extra abilities that spread malediction. You've got abilities that do more damage and extra debuffs to add to enemies. But a way to keep malediction competitive and worth your time would be to give you things down the path of decay that just augment all debuffs, malediction being one of them.
So it might add another d6 as a feature to your debuffs.
I think it'd be easier to add a flat.
Like just DOT?
Yeah.
For every step you take or something? Or
so
every time a feature comes up. That would be a feature.
Anytime you deal damage with... This is just spitballing because we're not that far yet. Anytime you deal damage with debuff, you get to add your dexterity as well. Or you double your composure.
Ooh, that would be nice. Mm.
Yeah. You add your composure again.
Yeah.
So right now, malediction adds no composure, but Shadow of Death does.
Yes.
So if you say you add your composure again, you get a d6 plus 3. And
you get your composure on malediction, and then you get double composure.
On Shadow of Death.
On Shadow of Death.
So I think that's a good way to think about how to balance it.
Mm-hmm. And the flat number keeps it simple.
Yeah.
What do you do with the other caster classes for the same reason?
I don't know, but they don't have those same issues. They're not spreading the wealth in the same way. You can always give them a new ability that does more damage or add extra dice to their previous abilities.
Yeah, or just because it's a single type of damage, you just be like, increase fire damage by this much. Do more damage when you use ice attacks.
So here's another thing. Should Shadow of Death, because we're seeing Nesbitt use it, step one decay, should it bypass armor? It doesn't increase in damage over time like fire or acid in the same way. I think maybe the answer is yes. Because it's flat composure damage.
Yeah. So there's no roll either, yeah.
Yeah, there's no roll. Maybe it just bypasses armor. You do 3 damage or whatever your composure is.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flavor-wise, how does Shadow of Death work?
You create a zone of decay, of like entropy.
Uh-huh.
And people who begin their turn in it take damage.
I can see that ignoring armor.
I don't think it... I think kind of treat it like poison.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's a debuff.
It's like you poison the air almost. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
and if we want to write something into it, we're like, oh man, this monster has a gas mask.
Yeah. Like, how many times have you...
Like, you can make exceptions to things, but...
Right. But, like, how many times have you seen, like, in a movie or whatever, someone who has the power just to decay, like an E.T. when all the fucking stuff is dying around you, and it's like, but I'm wearing a thick enough shirt, so it doesn't really bother me. Like, that don't make sense, not really, you know?
I think that would be reason enough for people to go step one decay.
Well, it also...
Nesbitt already wants step one decay because of the teleport.
Yeah.
And because of lifesteal.
But it also makes sense... flavor wise in which, like, you can do really good damage with decay, you can just straight up right now, but it doesn't seem like they're not getting like Kamehameha attacks.
No,
they're much more control, so allowing
them can't even choose an area to Nova. Like, that's not their deal.
So the idea that they get to, even if we just every now and again throw them an armor ignoring attack, we're like, I'm going for your flesh.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't have any issue with it.
And there should be things...
Because you can't crit with it either.
No.
And you just cast it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's make the change to all three of those things. Keith will be very happy. Now that we've got that, Champion needs more abilities within its steps that make dual wielding worthwhile.
Dope.
So Nesbitt is going to use Helmet Splitter.
Yes.
Because 3d4 is better than 1d4.
It's also... even that is solid.
Right.
Like, let's be real.
Okay.
With sneak attack damage, especially.
But Gaylene is doing 3d12.
Destroys.
And double strength.
Yes.
Right? So, what's the dual wielding equivalent of Helmet Splitter? We can even keep it as Helmet Splitter and then make a separate rule for dual wielding.
So, something that's the...
Do we have versatile dual wielding? Can you use a sword and an axe?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Then dope. Okay.
The equivalent of Helmet Splitter for dual wielding, are we talking it has to be applicable to both bashing, bashing, piercing, and cutting?
Yeah, so here's just something I'll throw out that I think mechanically is fine, is just double weapon damage, both weapons.
Yeah.
You have to hit with both. Like, you still have to roll each individually, but it does two weapon damage with each weapon plus your strength.
I think that'll work out.
And what is that, like a daily? What is it?
It's a scene.
Okay. Yeah, it's a scene. It's sick.
Imagine I'm using a pole hammer.
Yeah.
I'm doing it from two spaces away. I'm dealing 2d6 plus, and if I have three strength, I'm doing 2d6 plus six. So I'm doing, with Helmet Splitter, 6d6 plus six.
In fact, my only complaint about it is that it is so much better than my daily.
Yeah. So the most damage you could do with dual wielding, if we just double weapon damage on each weapon, and you're still allowed to add your strength to each attack.
Yes.
The most damage you could do...
What's the highest?
Would be an axe. It's a
D10.
So you do 4d10.
Yes.
If both hit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... That's already a weakness.
Less likely than...
But it's more likely that you will hit.
With one, yeah. And what's Galen's current one?
3d12 plus 6. I feel like that's fair. How do we feel
about that? I'm going to say don't add strength modifier for dual wielding.
You should, but if you're getting stronger, shouldn't you hit harder,
it's one of it is based on numbers, and the other one is based on it being kind of like more of a flurry thing rather than a dedicated strike.
Well, you have to roll each hit individually.
Yes.
So if Gaylene crits, she does 42 damage. If somebody dual wielding axes crits on both attacks with three strength, does 46 damage. They have to crit on both.
Actually, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. That works.
Right? That is the most damage you could possibly get. But, I mean, if you add a strength point, so if they go 3 dex, 4 strength.
Yeah.
And then if they got a magic weapon.
Well, but then it's individually, like, you know, if somebody's got one hit.
And that should be one of the bonuses of, like, I think we already did a pretty decent job of making two-handers just good, just as good.
I feel if you roll 2d20s,
you should feel fucking awesome.
And you crit on both, doing two extra damage than somebody who crit on a two-handed weapon, I'm not going to cry about that.
No, not even a little bit.
That's fine. So are we cool with changing Helmet Splitter
for
that?
Mm-hmm. All right. Actually works.
Let me look at the daily they get, because they get Showboat.
Showboat is...
I love Showboat.
We haven't gotten to see it yet.
No. Well, she's not step three.
I know. There's a lot of people. I'm the only step three, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or wait, no, I'm...
You're step two.
I'm step two.
Reckless Abandon. You do double weapon damage plus strength, and you enter a stance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to change that.
not solid.
It's more about the stance than the attack. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the attack is just makes it nice.
Yeah, until the stance ends, whenever an enemy makes an attack of opportunity against you.
Is that an encounter or daily?
Daily. Your next attack gains a weapon damage until the end of your next turn. This effect stacks. So I don't feel like we need to change that at all.
No, because you can do something that can be moderately good, or that could be devastating.
Right. I don't feel like using a one-handed versus a two-handed dramatically changes how you approach that.
No.
Okay. I mean, something we could change to make it better is, if we wanted to, we could change it so that it would do two weapon damage plus double strength, no matter what you had.
That's solid. I actually like that change. I like that change.
As a daily?
Yeah.
Because you're going to lead in with one arm.
It's a concerted strike.
Okay.
I like that.
And we'll have to keep that in mind as we look at champion going forward. I want to talk about changes to two paths cores.
All right.
One is zealotry, which we already made. In our last play episode, we changed it so that the renewing assault, the healing over time, went to zealotry instead of command.
Yeah.
And then we already talked about giving command a daily lay on hands equivalent.
Yeah.
I think this is great because it gives zealotry freedom to even begin prayer strike.
Yeah. And also heal while it's doing it.
Exactly. Radiance. Martyr is too complicated and too risky. And kind of underpowered.
And for a healer, it's almost the opposite of the thing you want to do.
What do we... So, we're core Radiance. Let's throw Martyr out the window. What do we want?
What does it have at core?
And they have an at-will attack that is a area of effect heal.
Okay.
Or damage.
All right. What should Radiance do? What's their goal?
The goal is to burst with light that will damage enemies and heal allies.
All right. Is the burst in at will?
It is.
All right.
Well, it's not from there. So I'm thinking maybe an aura? Because this one, it's burst to within 5, so they can throw it out. What about around them? Can they do something around them?
Like turtle up, like everyone around
like
them.
Like a buffy?
Maybe a buff, maybe something.
Do you want the buff to accentuate damage, or do you want it to be defensive?
I'd imagine defensive.
So we talked about.
I feel like healing offensive should be zealotry much.
There is a version of a doctor who'd be like, "Look, I'm going to help you by giving you a gun."
Yeah,
but that's not really what they.
So
do the
that's zealotry.
Yeah.
We added to them a feature that if they get crit, they have a chance to blind the person who crit them.
Uh-huh.
Which is a big deal. Blinding sucks. Like it's
massive. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Against a single big boss, that would be a huge shift.
Really,
right.
That would be a very large shift.
So in the context of having that now, that defensive thing, and the area heal or area damage, what's a core exception to the rules that they would benefit from?
That the player would benefit from, or that the team would benefit from if the player did?
Both.
Either or.
Yeah, those are
one.
I feel like in any situation in this system, you're talking about both.
What would make you feel like a badass without being overpowered?
What would make you feel like a badass as a support character? Because they have something that can do damage. I don't want to add another damage thing.
Something
dazzling ray is still fucking dope.
Something that. How do you feel like a badass helping someone like if you're a medic on Omaha Beach, what's the thing that you can do or
shielding?
Shielding or
cuz here's the thing I liked about Martyr. It was unique. Maybe we can change it so that it still works. Maybe you can as a swift action provide shielding and the damage done to your shields compiles until you unleash it.
I like that.
Instead of you taking a negative, just whatever your composure is, you can grant it as a swift action to an ally that you can touch.
Okay.
And that is the implied risk. You have to be close enough to touch them.
The banking damage that you can unleash, I'd rather be half.
Your max composure
is 4.
4.
Possible.
Right. So say you shield somebody for 4.
Yeah.
They take 4. Your turn has to come around again.
You can bank that. Pretty fast, though.
Yeah, so let's say 3 rounds go by. That's a lot of combat, right? So most fights that we've done, I think, have lasted around 5 rounds.
Yeah.
Let's say 5 rounds goes by. 5 times 8 is 40.
People have hit for 40 with encounters.
Yeah, and Radiance does not have something like that. But if the player puts in enough initiative to kind of keep up on that, is that too much? So, and that's assuming absolute maximum. They've put 4 into composure.
All right. Here's also, is this also a weird thing? Maybe that's not too much because it's a weird thing where, like, with smaller parties, with 4 or even 3 player parties, that's a stopgap for tanks and damage dealing.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're really smart about it, you can overcome a lot of things. But if you have a really good team, like if you have someone who can just like hit for 40 twice an encounter, that's not going to matter as much.
But here's a way to nerf it without affecting that person's choices. What if it's after armor mitigation? So I put a shield of 4 on somebody and somebody has 6 armor. In order to give me the full value of what I can redirect, they have to do at least 10 damage against that person.
Okay. Yes. I like that. I like that a lot.
Because if they do 8, I only get 2.
Yep.
And they've still got 2 shielding.
And that person then takes no damage, which makes tanks nicer.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes Citadel and Champions more fun, too.
Mm-hmm.
And a little riskier, which is good.
So you're rewarded for the more you save them or shield them from, the more you are rewarded.
Yes. Now, and I like the idea that you can either choose swift action, but melee touch. Like you have to be
right up in the ship.
You have to touch them to apply it.
Do you have to stay in contact with them, or can you like sort of do that, then do your move action away?
I think you can do that,
yeah.
And do your move action.
And you could still bank it. That's still a force you hold within yourself.
But like, say you do that and you move away from them, and they take 10 damage. They take no damage, but they have 6 armor, and they've used up all your shielding.
Yeah.
You have to run back up to them.
Yeah.
And do it again.
Yeah.
That's risky.
Yeah.
Do you want to try it?
I think it's worth at least a try. Like, just
I think that's a pretty hard paradigm shift. That ability is going to change how Core Radiance is looked at heavily. Like, this is a big change.
In playtests we've done, people have like, oh, decay core, radiance step 1.
The idea that you would splash radiance, depending on what kind of melee class you are, you might just go core radiance, then straight champion just for that, which I kind of like.
Yeah, I'm into that. Now, I mean, core zealotry shits all over core radiance.
Yeah. Like, not even fair.
It's so good. Core champion is better than core radiance.
Yes.
Because it is to healing as well.
That's why it's like the idea of the aura shielding. Like, I like the mechanic of it, but is that enough? Where if I'm playing this for the first time and I'm reading that description, am I like, all right, well, now I really want to use it. I have to take advantage of it. I have to plan ahead for it. But what's like what's an immediate thing you can give them?
Dude,
that's like,
so here's
almost think we can't.
Here's a situation case that I think if you are somebody who thinks this way, you will value. So I'm a min maxer. If I look at that description, now I see that if I get crit, the GM gets punished.
Yeah.
I have an area heal. Now I have an ability that I can shield people who I expect to get hit.
Yeah.
And when they get hit, it stacks up damage until the end of the scene. That means I can hit with any of my ray or area of effects and choose one person that's affected by them and nuke them.
Is that release an attack action? I think it should be.
No, I think you do the attack. And then
you just add it on?
You add it on.
See, this is a really good...
Or it could be a heal.
Oh, that makes it even better.
Nobody's picking Radiance. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. This is really good, but I don't... Because I'm not a min-maxer. I'm not in it. So, like, yeah. I'm just saying, let's say I'm in a scenario where we're about to run a game, and everyone's picking tank, everyone's picking whatever the fuck, and then I'm going, we don't have a healer. If I don't pick healer, we're all fucked. I'm not typically a healer. I don't typically do this, but I'm going to do this to play the game, and I'll make something up on the spot. And I'm reading this thing. Everything that you just described is amazing, but I feel like for your core thing, the first thing you get, it's like 3 steps of planning ahead of what I would expect from a core thing.
The shielding is enough.
Yeah, the shielding is immediate. And then any damage the shield takes, you get a save. And you're like, all right, I'm going to hang on to that. 3 damage it did to my shields. And then I can do a ray through a group of people and decide one person that it affects, whether it's healing to an ally or damage to an enemy.
I think once you play, you can then see the potential. But if you're just reading it on the sheet, you may not get it as fast.
I'm actually fine with that, especially for support classes, because to make support classes feel as fun and read as fun as straight damage classes,
you know what?
You have to make them twice as good.
I was just going
to
say, you know,
straight up have to.
I probably am overthinking it, because the most important thing is, like, it's like you just said, it's an immediate shield. So even if I don't even realize that I can stack it up, Or if I, or if I,
you'll do it anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, okay, well, shield you. Oh, I just saved you. And then you're like, all right, you just earned that much stuff. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. I can cash that in. And
imagine this duo on its own. Max Citadel, six armor, step one.
Yeah. So
max
so
composure.
Double Citadel.
Yeah.
Max armor.
Max composure, double radiance. You have to do 11 damage to a player character to damage them. And you will be banking 4 damage or 4 healing at any time.
That's if you max it out.
That's already, yeah. Unless you're doing no damage, that's a functional 2-man group.
Yeah.
And that's dope.
I think I have concerns that it may be too powerful.
Can you put it on yourself?
No.
No. Yeah. You
have to touch somebody.
Yeah. Can you heal yourself with your burst, though? I think you should be able to.
Your burst, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put it in, and then we'll just playtest it.
All right. Yeah, let's do it.
That's what the whole fucking show's about.
Yeah, I'm actually, well, the whole thing is tanks and support characters, I'm the least worried of making broken ones, because if they're just good, having 5 tanks, if you take no damage, it's still a boring, shitty game and no one will do that. Even if it's really easy, if it's when you make a DPS character that is just unreasonable,
right?
Then you can just have 5 people who do 40 damage a turn, yeah, and you can do it on the first turn. That'll make anything a meat grinder no matter what.
And he was just like, well, like, why the fuck am I even playing this game if he's running through them, you know, like, whatever. That's
This might be too good, but it's not first term over too good.
Yeah. If it's too good, we've got ways to change
to mitigate it.
Yeah.
Because you have to bank it, it might make an abrupt end to an encounter, but it's not going to make an abrupt encounter.
All right, so the last topic for this episode, I've got some shit that I'm going to move to the next episode, is the subject of rituals. So magic, we don't have a good framework yet for how magic with a K is going to work for casting prepared spells, like spells you really have to work for. So I only want to introduce 3 different kinds of spells right now, and then we can talk about adding other ones later. Illusion, conjuring, and revelation.
All right.
How do you define conjuring and revelation?
So conjuring, you are casting a spell that creates something. If that makes sense.
Revelation gives you information?
Gives you information.
And illusion makes something, but it's not real. And I'm guessing it's easier to make something that's not real than real.
Thank you for bringing that up. Here's things that complicate casting an illusion spell.
All right.
How long it's going to last. The size of the illusion. And the number of people affected.
Okay. Ooh, really?
Yes.
You make a good illusion, and the amount of people who view it affect its difficulty.
Well, I'm thinking this. Okay, I want to create an illusion where I look a certain way, but I only really care if one person perceives
from
me that
one
way.
Right. From if, one point of view.
If the king looks at me and thinks that I am clean and sober and worthy of his daughter's hand.
Exactly. But everybody else disapproves, and the king's like, I don't see what's wrong with...
exactly. So it's like, all right. you're just trying to convince him that you look good, you're not coming in the throne like Prince Ali Ababwa, and, you know, and fooling everybody.
I want to simplify that slightly, because I don't want it to... Is it going to increase in difficulty for each person seeing it by the level of group?
Like I would
think... A person, a small group, a large group, a crowd?
A city, you know.
Well, I think that generally, if you're trying to make an illusion on a large scale,
yeah,
generally, it only needs to last for a moment.
Yeah, that's
depends.
Not the question I asked
it
also.
No. But that leads me into the answer to your question.
Yeah.
But if you want to affect one person permanently, that might be harder.
Oh, that's way harder.
Permanently, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. My point is the scaling of when we're determining difficulty is the actual amount of people describing how hard it is or general group?
I think if you want to specify, then it's more difficult.
Okay.
Like if you, like so for example, like just to compare, if I say I want to stand in the town center in broad daylight with everyone looking at me because I say that I'm going to do this thing to prove that I'm all-powerful and that you shouldn't mess with me or my friends, I'm going to say, I can command lightning to strike me and it won't kill me, but it's just an illusion. But everybody has to see it. That is difficult, but not as difficult as convincing one person that I have a third eye in my head.
And they will always see me that way.
And they will always see me that way. Yeah. That's I agree. Like a lightning strike in front of a million people is way well not way but like,
because
easier.
It's an instant.
Exactly. It's only for that one thing. Yeah.
Okay. We feel good about that?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll deal with the mechanics of it maybe next episode. But I feel like these are the parameters. So these are the things that will change the difficulty of something. Conjuring. the mass of the thing.
Yes.
Sure.
Is a complicating factor.
Sure.
Making a pillow should be easier than making a brick.
Yes. The complexity of the thing you're going to create.
Yes.
If you want to create a watch, it's a lot more difficult than creating an equivalent size lump of stone.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
And the rarity.
Making it gold is harder than making it out of
sand.
Sand, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. That how do you see establishing the difficulty when you have all of those? Like,
not yet. I don't have an
like
answer.
Like a table or a reference table or something? Or?
Yes. So you'd go like the mass between these weights and between these weights and between these weights will increase the difficulty by this amount. The complexity, and you'll give examples between these amounts. And the rarity, you give examples between these amounts. And I think rarity you would attach to value.
But values can change.
Material value.
Yeah.
So like complexity can change the rarity because of how complex the thing you want is. But the value of the materials involved is an extra extenuating factor.
But you might go to an island where, if you go to an island where diamonds are literally all over the ground and they don't value it, suddenly just because I'm on this island, I can make diamonds easier?
Well, no. I think we pick a worldwide standard. We would decide it by the world. Like if you travel to an area
where they have all the copper ever.
Yeah. Why are you conjuring copper?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just saying it's like the proximity to an idea changes the value.
I think things have a certain rarity in our setting, and the rarity of those materials in our setting changes the difficulty of conjuring them. Now, and it should get to a point where you're like, well, things are, I mean, I know they're extremely rare in the world, but where we are, we can actually just go get one.
Because, like, if I'm in a copper mine and I want to make a copper coin, shouldn't it be easier than if I'm in the Arctic and want to make a copper coin?
No. I think you should just go mine it.
Yeah.
the example is what I'm saying, as far as the difficulties.
I think you're better off mining it. I think if you're in an area where copper is plentiful, why are you wasting your time trying to conjure it?
I'm just saying as an example of the level of difficulty.
And I'm engaging with your example.
I have another example. You have the raw copper you need to conjure a specifically complex thing.
Like a cog in a machine?
Yeah. And you're like, I want to make a watch out of copper. I have a lump of copper. Does that make it easier?
I think that should.
Because you should.
For a ritual, because we were talking before about you got to get ingredients.
Now you're not talking about conjuring.
Oh, okay.
So you don't need the copper anymore.
No.
You need to alter it.
Yes.
So that's like a transmutation.
Alteration spell.
Alteration, that kind of thing. We're not going to deal with that right now.
Okay. Yes.
You're pulling it out of thin air is what we're saying.
But yeah. We're saying you are creating it from ether.
Gotcha.
You know,
okay.
you are using magic to form something.
You are the replicator on the Enterprise.
Would components matter at all in this?
You mean like you having to gather components?
I'm saying like, oh, I want to make this thing out of gold, but I have a lead lump.
That's a good question. Should you have to gather equivalent mass? I don't know.
I think you should.
But alchemy is one of these sidesteps. So if you have a lump of lead, have the alchemist transfer it over into gold. Meanwhile, you're prepping for the spell over here.
But the alchemy, alchemy in the way you're talking about it is magical.
Yeah.
Not in the way that we've discussed it in this campaign.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if I've got a lump of lead, I'm like, well, I can make 1,600 super rare watches, you know, like out of this giant lump of lead that didn't cost me anything. And it's like, well, no, it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Like,
I almost don't want conjuration to make something out of nothing. I would like the idea that it needs to be of the similar mass and you shift it.
How about this instead? Equivalent value.
Ooh, I like that.
So it's almost like Full Metal Alchemist rules. Oh, shit, I don't have this. I keep using watch because it's a complex little thing.
Yeah, it's easy, everyone understands.
Right. So this artisan watch costs 1,500 dirhams. We don't have any of the materials to make it, but I do have this sword that I'm not using that's worth 1,500 dirhams.
And has the mass.
It's not an automatic success.
No.
I need that minimum to attempt this. Now
I'm
going to try to conjure it something.
But things will change in value depending on where you are.
This is the objective value. There is a world value of...
Yeah, I mean, we have an equipment sheet that will tell you how much something's worth.
Yeah, we get to set an objective value.
All right, yeah. I'm getting too literal and realistic with it.
Like, and also, when you calculate trade value based on where you are, we're going to look at an objective value that we have set and then put 25%.
Like, yeah, they'd be like, things cost this much more here and this much less. You know, depending on the kind of item.
This is a gamification segment heavily because you know what I don't want to do? Construct a whole set of rules to simulate an economy.
No one wants that.
I don't.
I'm just eager to find loopholes. That's
yeah.
All.
No, please do. So I think equivalent value, but we're talking objective value.
Yes.
Okay, sure.
So not region specific.
Okay.
And I also want to say this podcast does not necessarily ascribe to the concept in reality of objective value.
No, absolutely
but
not.
But we need this in this game to it.
Otherwise,
it to
there's no rules for anything.
Yes. Yeah. Magic isn't real. Neither are gods. We are
objective value is a concept that we are presenting in this game.
Okay. It's funny we didn't have any of these questions for illusion. Like,
well, because an illusion's an illusion is an illusion.
Right.
It's a hologram.
They're all equally fake.
And you would like, would it be more difficult to affect one person permanently or a group momentarily? You're like, one person permanently.
Yeah.
Like, we don't disagree on that at all. Okay. Revelation. Extenuating factors that make it more difficult.
Yes. The farther in the future, I'm guessing.
The area that you are trying to divine might be more difficult because of things about that area. The complexity of the info, if you need something more than a yes or a no on a question that is simpler or more complicated. The distance between you and the area that you're trying to, or the person you're trying to get info on.
Of course.
The amount of time that has passed between you casting the ritual and the event, whether before or after, and any effort that has been taken to ward against revelation.
I want to add a thing to that.
Let's hear it.
I think the unpredictability, I want to bring it back to momentum. I want the concept of momentum to exist throughout a lot of things. There are people who are determinative and they are like basic NPCs are in my mindscape of how I describe almost the philosophy of the game. There are NPCs, they are determinative. The bigger of a mover or shaker you are, I think the more momentum in the game you have. Finding out what a peasant is doing on his farm should be easier than figuring out what the big bad is doing.
But the peasant on the farm isn't going to have like wards on their mind.
No. Unpredictability and your importance to the story, the idea that what you're doing will and can affect it should be represented.
So is that functionally different than the poor term that I used for area?
Yes. Because I think area is the span of the physical distance.
Yeah.
Distance is an extenuating factor.
The span. Oh, okay. So when you're thinking area, you're also thinking
anything within this cone of influence or whatever?
But also the breadth of what you're looking at. Okay.
Yes.
Now that you describe it that way, I am okay with that.
We should find another term for this, but the individual.
The depth of the knowledge that you're trying to get.
If you're trying to follow an individual, the area is very small.
Yeah.
But if that person does a lot of shit, it makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I don't think area is the correct...
It's not the correct term, but like if you're like, I want to know if a group of troops entered this area, I think that's relatively easy, but...
If I want to know where
This guy say to those troops when they came through?
Exactly.
That's a different question.
Well, that's also complexity of info.
Also, where is this merchant is a much larger question than where is this serf?
Yeah, so let's say...
And just simply, is this person lying is way simpler than how much of that is a lie.
Yeah.
You know?
Or then what is the truth?
Very different. It's not a lie if you believe it.
It's not a lie if truth is not objective.
So instead of area, we'll say target. The complexity of the target.
Yes. I like that.
Or goal even, because if your target is a person or a thing and your goal is to get...
I think
the kind of information.
Those are fairly interchangeable.
Let's say you're following a powerful mage.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's difficult because this person's a powerful mage because their fate is tied up in complex ways.
Their options.
Yes.
Any decision they make.
But if you want to say, I'm going to cast a spell that will alert us if this mage enters this city, is way easier than... If the mage talks to the king, I want to know what he says.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Implicitly, yes.
Right. Okay. So I think we're on the same page there. So I got...
Oh, no. We're talking about nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
We are at nuts and bolts.
Okay. So things that make it more difficult. The target can make it more difficult.
Uh-huh.
The level of complexity of what you want to know. The distance between you and the target can make it more difficult. Yeah. The time delay, whether it happened a long time ago or it's going to happen... A long time from now.
Temporal proximity.
Temporal distance. Physical distance, temporal distance.
Right.
Yeah.
Any defenses or wards against anybody finding out.
Which could range from things they've cast on themselves to just like...
Whispering.
to or yeah, like, or just, oh, this is a giant magical mountain full of magic that's magic. That, like, yeah, you fucks see, up everything.
So, we decided to have the conversation in this place because it is magically nebulous.
Yeah, and to be more directly to the example you just gave, we're in the king's court and we're asking for help to fight whatever. We see the assistant come in, whisper something to the king, and the king then says, "I'm sorry, I can't do that." We leave, and I go, "We need to find out what he whispered to him. It was just moments ago, but it was a whisper." As opposed to if the guy comes in and goes, "My lord, you have a message, whatever."
So,
you know.
So I do want to say
You don't take penalties for it having happened in the past. It was very recent.
Yeah.
Proximity.
It
happened in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you were, distance should also not count if you were there to witness it.
Yes.
Re-witnessing things is easier than we things you were not a part of.
Yeah. However, the fact that it was whispered.
Yes.
Means it's difficult.
Yes.
And if the target is particularly influential.
Yeah.
Makes it more difficult.
Makes it difficult. So we need a way to rank targets, but that's going to come with our difficulty rating later.
I would also like it to have no more than 5 levels just for
simplicity.
Don't put that on it.
I'm just saying. One of the things I like about the system that we're deriving now is I haven't had to count, other than HP and damage, I haven't had to count to double digits. That's nice.
Okay.
That's super nice.
You could easily imagine a system where we say, because 100. This person meets these things, he's a 12.
Yeah.
And the next guy's a 17. But if we create a system...
I just don't want it to be 1,000.
What I'm saying is if the system is linear enough, it might be less complicated than something like CR7. Yes. You know? Okay. Well, I feel pretty good about those at least. I want to bring up the rest later, which I think are things like counter magic.
Protection magic.
Yeah. Well, I think that would fall into it, right? Like ways to dispel, sense magic, that kind of thing.
Decurse.
Yeah.
Unravel.
Yeah. Dispel. Like, I feel like everything we just mentioned is one school.
Yes.
That's one kind of magic that we can create rules. Yeah, we can create rules to...
Defense against the dark arts.
Do you guys remember the trailer we never made?
How could
I
forget? Yeah.
Yeah.
I've thought about that concept a lot, by the way.
Genghis Khan being raised from the dead.
Yeah, but also just the idea of can't cast magic. All I do is unravel magic.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I do. And you can't make a fireball? And they're like, God, no.
Well, all right, guys, we covered a lot of ground. We still got a lot more to go, obviously. We've got more world building to do that we didn't even get to tonight that I didn't bring up because there was no way we were getting into it. So I just want to thank Doug for showing up.
Yo.
Max was sick tonight, if you were wondering. He was not feeling well enough to join us.
He has the child flu.
Yes. But we really appreciate you guys listening. You can always find us on our Patreon at patreon.com/RPGFS. Please comment. Even if you're not a patron, we'd love to hear what you think. Also,
stop messaging me and telling me that you like the episode. You could just put it on the Patreon.
And then all of us can reply.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're on patreon.com/RPGFS.
And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/RPGFS.
And we're on Instagram at RPGFromScratch, all one word.
And we're also on Twitter at HomebrewHombres. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.